Welcome to the Productivityist Podcast. I'm your host, Mike Vardy, founder of Productivityist. This week on the show, we have a very special guest. It is David Allen, the author of Getting Things Done, The Art of Stress-Free Productivity. As of today, when this episode is being released, the new updated version of Getting Things Done has been released. And I'm really, really happy to have him on here for a conversation to talk about his new book, as well as some other ideas revolving around productivity. This isn't my first rodeo with David Allen. I've spoken with him on a number of occasions and even had the opportunity to meet with him at South by Southwest in 2014, as we both were speaking at the same time, shared a green room together, and were able to finally connect face to face. So thanks again for listening. This is a bit of an abridged interview as opposed to the interview that the Patreon supporters get for the podcast. So if you're interested in supporting the podcast and getting more exclusive content and throwing a little bit of monetary support our way, you can head over to patreon.com/productivityist and you can take care of that there. But let's not wait any longer. We've procrastinated long enough. Let's get right into the interview that I had, the conversation, the discussion, if you will, with David Allen, the author of Getting Things Done, here on the Productivityist Podcast. Mr. David Allen, author of Getting Things Done, Make It All Work, Ready for Anything. I mean, and you've got the new version of Getting Things Done that actually drops today as we are releasing this podcast. David, thanks so much for joining me.
Mike, a delight as always.
So we had a chance to connect last year at South by Southwest, so basically a year ago, which was great. We didn't get to see each other speak because we both spoke at the same time. Yours was a conversation with David Allen, which was, but incidentally, everyone, that's not him talking to himself. There was another well, David Allen.
It was sort of. That's kind of what I do. But
yeah. but I want to talk a bit about not just the new book, because a lot of the listeners out there know, they're either GTD followers or they've read the book. I want to get a little bit deeper into some of the other stuff that follows around, stress-free productivity, because that's, I think, the key is the stress-free part. A lot of people, especially now, there's a feeling of, we have to be more productive and there's so much more stress surrounding it because of all the information that comes our way and all the different ways that information can come our way. And before we dive into some of the how people can combat that a bit with GTD as well as what you've got in the new book, I want to kind of talk to you about the problem that is perceived out there when it comes to that new fangled technology we're seeing more and more of that people are dealing with, email. Now, email isn't that new, but what I'm seeing, and I don't know if you see this as well, is that people just keep getting stuck in that space. They can't get away from email. I've had one client I talked to today who says, I have to check. Email cannot be off for me. I must check it all the time, and then I can't get my other stuff done. I mean, I don't know if I would imagine that you've got some kind of strategy that you use to either deal with email so that it doesn't become this kind of bastion of stress. What do you do, and what do you kind of tell people when it comes to dealing with email in terms of either using it as a task management tool or just trying to deal with it as a consistent thing that's kind of pulling at them?
Well, don't shoot the medium. I've been on email since most people listening to this were born.
Right.
I got 1983 EasyLink, with a Radio Shack Model 100 I traveled with alligator plugs to plug it into the wall. With my, 4.0 modem to try to connect in with that. So I've been around that game a long time, and wow, we wouldn't even have this conversation if there weren't for email. So, obviously that's a kind of a duh, don't shoot the medium. The issues, in a way, it's good news for me because all of the plethora of email and constant on and, constant accessibility about that is forcing the issues about, what people are really about, what they're doing, what's meaningful, what's not. There are two spins I have on this right now, and I have to do a very important sidebar on this, Mike. A book that I didn't write, so this is not a paid political announcement. Brand new book out called Brain Chains. Two words, brain chains, as in the chains around your brain, by a guy named Theo Comprenolle, Comprenolle, who lives in Brussels right now. But it is a compilation of lots of new and the last decade of research in neuroscience about how all of that always on stuff is absolutely pretend that that's improving anybody's productivity in terms of the new generation, the digital generation. Do they have different brains? No, they don't. It took a million years to develop what we got. They're not going to change it in 10 years, believe me. And its limitation is now being overwhelmed by what people are trying to put in their brains and trying to keep in there. And a lot of new data about that. In other words, your brain actually cannot multitask. And when you try to do that, your switching costs are absurdly detrimental. So there's a lot of data about that right now. The other data that also has to do with email is how addictive it is. You know, literally, addiction as in dopamine hits that happen when you get an email ping or think you do. Fascinating data that even just thinking what might be landing in your smartphone or your email actually gives you a dopamine rush. And the dopamine rush, believe it or not, actually you get it even if 99% of your email is crap.
Yeah, yeah.
You still get it. It's just the 1%. It's like the more random the positive reinforcement, the deeper the addiction. Well, so there's a lot of data about that right now, which says, yeah, there's a certain portion of the fact that this always on dopamine rush producing dinging is undermining. And it's not you need to give that up. It's just, well, wait a minute, just be aware that that's happening or is likely to happen. And then what are you not doing because of that? What are you avoiding because of that? So back around to the initial question you asked, the other spin on this is that and by the way, the guy who wrote that, Theo and I are combining our resources to do a workshop in Amsterdam in the fall together, because the necessity for GTD to be able to chunk essentially the information that is potentially meaningful to you, so it's not constantly nagging at your brain, is absolutely survival stuff these days. You've got to do that. And if you're not, you're living in emergency scan mode, which is then that constant trying to multitask, which your brain can't actually do, which is just compounding all the stress about what's going on there. And back to the neuroscience, you know, Tierney and Baumeister in their book Willpower, which was a great book that began to aggregate some of this research about the brain. They're the guys who popularized the idea of decision fatigue. So the reflective part of your brain, which comes out of the forebrain, the executive function, is one that actually gets tired. Every decision you make draws down its horsepower. Mm-hmm. And you have a limit to the number of things. So you don't want to be trying to force yourself to make decisions at the end of a long decision-making day. You got no juice.
Yeah.
Right. You will then revert to your reflexive brain, which is the limbic brain, the survival brain, and it basically is just going to be whatever's present, latest and loudest, you know, survive, eat or be eaten, you know, kind of the part of the brain that evolved to do that. And that's not a very trustworthy part of your brain. So all that point is that if you still leave a bunch of stuff that I still haven't decided what it means or where it goes, and I have to redecide what to do about it every time I open my email app, that you've just added huge amounts of drain on your cognitive horsepower.
Mm-hmm.
So again, we're now getting scientific data that says you better chunk these things into the categories that they mean. And again, most people are back to actually your initial question, most people don't zero out their backlog of inputs, including email, every 24 to 40 hours like I do. If you do that, you don't need to be in your email all day. Sometimes I'm there all day because why not? You know, I'm sitting here, I'm hanging out, and it's a great conversation, and I got an open door office, you know.
Yep.
it's just digital, not physical, but there are times when that's fine. It's exactly what I want to do, you know. And nothing inherently wrong with that. You know, a lot of that depends on what else I'm trying to do. Am I doing that to avoid something I ought to be doing? Well, that's another issue.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm doing that because I just want to be spontaneous and open and see what's coming in, you know, in my world, I'm much freer to do that the more my backlog is at zero. If my backlog is at 2,000 still unprocessed things that are dinging at me, yelling at me, whispering at me or whatever, call, hey, decide about me, do something about me, and there may be something potentially significant in there, then anything that's new input feels bad. It feels like an interruption and adds to stress as opposed to, new opportunity to engage with my world.
I want to touch base on context because I know when I try to explain context to people, I don't know if you meet, it's just one of those things where people are so linear minded when they work by project. So they're very, you know, I know if I go through step A, step B, step C through this project, I'll get it done, but it takes a lot. I mean, they get across to a point where they're stuck on something and they can't move it forward. And so you try to say, okay, well, what if you worked by context? And they're like, well, what, explain it to me. And you, what is the way that you find that resonates with not just the people who are GTDers that really, okay, yes, this is what a context is, but for those who have never even thought about working by context, even though they probably have worked by context, how do you kind of crack that nut? Because it's one of those things where I think people are so used to working in a linear fashion that context may not seem to be as linear as it could be. Does that make sense?
It does. However, Mike, you might want to reframe context, because they're just talking about context called context by project or context by linear sequence.
Mm.
They're all context.
Yeah. No, it's and true.
This is new field in all of technology that's going on. It's context-based stuff. But context could be how you feel. Context could be where I am physically. It could be context could be I have an action list called creative writing, which is the same context as at computer, but I needed to spin that out of my at computer stuff, because a lot of my at computer stuff is stuff I can handle at my desk sitting upright, you know, just managing the business of the day kind of things that require that. And then I need to sit down. I need to lay back a little bit and put my computer in my lap as opposed to on my desk in order to do the creative writing stuff. So I found, like, right now I have two very different kind of contexts. And it's very useful to see my work in those things. If I blend those together, then in either place I feel overwhelmed because I don't feel capable of doing creative thinking while I'm sitting at my desk, but I've got a bunch of creative thinking staring at me. But if I'm just sitting back, you know, then I see all this other work to do, and I can't really focus myself on the creative context I need to be in. I need to be in a reflective mode. I need to be able to have, you know, a little bit of a time base, you know, a time window here to be able to then get into the flow of some thinking and some creative writing. So if you think about that, that was again down in the weeds, but there is some subtlety here in terms of those distinctions, and there's absolutely nothing wrong with either way. It's called, hey, well, pick out your context. You want to organize all your actions by projects? Go right ahead. Absolutely. So, you know, I think people took, you know, what I wrote in Getting Things Done and a lot of the writing that say, well, most people have found when I'm out with a phone, I'd rather see all my phone calls on a list as opposed to have to go find them all in project lists. It's like, yeah, duh. You know, I'm out for errands. You know, I don't want to have to find my errands organized by the project that errand is about.
Yeah.
I'm out in my car. I'm walking around. I'm downtown. You know, show me my errands. So it's a little hard to refute the practical value of having those kind of reminders and triggers organized by where you need them and where you could actually do the action. But that can get pretty subtle. There's no right or wrong about that. It's just called, well, you decide. You know, if you are a total macro freak in Excel and you decide you want to list all these things and put all the different potential tags you might want to, this is a phone call, but it's also with low energy and it also only takes 4 minutes. It's also about my family. And, you know, and it also gives me this emotional payoff if I actually finish this thing. Sure, make a column for each one. that'll last about 2 hours while the rain is raining on a Saturday and your inner geek has shown up and thought that's really cool. But as soon as the fire hose of Monday hit you in the face, you know, you're not going to do any of that. You're not going to even start.
Now, let's dive into the book a little bit before I want to talk about, you know, where you're at now. But what's different in the book this time around for those? I mean, it's been, what, almost a dozen years? We're talking, how many years has it been?
You know, since I started writing it in 98, 99. So we're talking, you know, when's that? So, you know, 15 years.
Yeah.
You know, something like that plus. What's different is, I literally transcribed the whole text and retranscribed it based upon how I would say it now. And so essentially I rewrote the whole book, though if you read it again, you say, well, that's the same paragraph. That's the same paragraph. Yeah, those I said, that's exactly the way I'd say it now. So I have to say, you know, pardon my, you know, if there's an ego boost here, I just have to take it. It's called, wow, a lot of that was really good. I read it over. I frankly had never reread the whole book start to finish since I wrote it. So it gave me the opportunity to go, well, that's a great way to say that. Oh, yeah, I wrote that. Oh, well, that's really good. But then there was a good bit of language that for more maturity of my awareness of this methodology and the sublimity of its application and its implications that I refined a lot of my words in the book to make it more evergreen more like, hey, in 2190, when we land on Jupiter, they can still read this book and go, oh, God, we need an in-basket and we need to make next action decision. So the methodology didn't change. Nothing about that. It
right.
was more about the methodology in the world we're living in now with a more universal sort of vocabulary and also perhaps a more sophisticated vocabulary. For instance, I made some very subtle changes over the last few years in thinking about, for instance, the five steps to how do you get control of your kitchen or your company. You know, you need to, in the book, it, in the first edition, it says collect, process, organize, review, do, which was basically a very tactical manual about I need to collect the stuff that's out of place. I need to process what it means. I need to organize it. I need to then step back and review it, and then I need to engage in some way. I just changed the vocabulary to, instead of collect, it's capture. Instead of process, it's clarify. Organize stayed the same. Instead of review, it's reflect. And instead of do, it's engage. Because if you think of those four words I changed, collect changed to capture, because really, if you're trying to get a truly clear head to create space, psychologically or otherwise, you really need to capture all the potential things, not just the obvious things that are out of control or that have your attention, but anything else that might should have your attention in that process. So capture is a more broad or a deeper or more subtle, perhaps a warmer or more elegant way to say
it. More holistic even, to a certain
exactly,
extent. Yeah.
Exactly. Same thing was true with process to clarify, because clarify just means I need to decide exactly what this means as opposed to there's some process, some mechanical thing I need to run this through. Now, you can still interchange the words, which I do. So they're still interchangeable. They didn't change what the behavior is that you do when you do it, but more a way to describe it and express it that perhaps indicates a deeper or more subtle level of how powerful this is.
And you know what? Actually, what I think those words do is they also make it a little bit easier for people to say, well, I use GTD at work, but then all of a sudden I get home and I just lose it because I've got that one brain for work and one brain for home, which some
exactly.
people do. This allows it to kind of cross over between and transcend both, because it should. I mean, it's a lifestyle, right? So
well, that, Mike, is a lot of what I put in the book. As a matter of fact, a chapter I added at the very end is the GTD Path of Mastery, which is a lifelong lifestyle process. And that's something that we've really come to acknowledge. I knew it intuitively even when I wrote the book, the first edition. But the first edition was really just trying to put a message out there more as a tactical manual for the professional world that was starting to get overwhelmed with all kinds of things. And as a new spin on what was the old sort of time management stuff. But since then, you know, a lot of the subtlety has emerged in terms of the what you just expressed, which is, wow, this is about my whole life. You know, this is not just what I do at work, but I need to decide next actions on what I do with this, with my kids', you know, college applications. I need to decide next actions on mom's elder care right now. I need to apply this thought process to my whole life. Like, no kidding. Well, I've known that from the beginning, but the new book, the new edition of it, basically has changed a bit of my examples and, you know, and the vocabulary to make it much easier and more elegant and warmer, I guess, for people to engage in as a lifestyle process. I mean, how good can you get at cooking or parenting or learning mm-hmm. Italian or doing the tango or playing the flute? There's no end. There's no end to that. And there's just in that same way, there's no end to how good you can get at managing the flow of life's work, which is what GTD is about.
Well, you're in a different place now, too, when you wrote the first book. I mean, you're in Europe now. You weren't in Europe when
yeah.
you were. But I mean,
yeah.
it changes.
And I'm 69. You know, that
yeah.
also makes
it changes the perspective of, you know, the lens that you're looking at through. And I wanted to ask you a couple more questions before we wrap up. Number one, you are now in Europe. And what is there? Do you see any cultural like differences in terms of how either whether GTD is kind of adopted or how it's where it's applied versus, like, say, the North American style of you know, engagement versus what you're seeing maybe overseas? Or is that something you haven't really explored yet?
You know, well, I'm touching into it all over the world. We're now franchising around the world our training programs. So I'm getting to see it. And I've known from the beginning there was no cultural bias to this. You know, it was a question until I went to Japan, way out in the far reaches, in a place that should have already had this already figured out in terms of the Zen, you know, side of it. And they're all going, oh, we're overwhelmed. We need this too. And I went, okay, well, you know, that was enough of a validation for me that there's nobody doesn't need this who's trying to manage more than they can, you know, has more stuff to do than they have time to deal with and still has, you know, all of these levels of commitments and opportunities in their lives they're trying to manage. So there's no distinction to that. It's really more, there's a bigger distinction between you and your next door neighbor and you and your cousin, Mike, than between you and about, you know, a million people around the world that are GTDers.
Gotcha. So it's mainly just how, is it even, it's not even really how it's presented. It's not even nuances. It's just the fact that you're just being there and helping them with this stuff, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, we made a choice a while ago called let's go where the world wants this to go, you know, and, you know, there was a good, Catherine and I decided to move to Europe. It was more of as much of a sort of lifestyle adventure, shift gears, time for a new perspective, you know, shake ourselves up and get a new window on the world. And we had fallen in love with Amsterdam, so why not? And I had the freedom to be able to do that business-wise, to, you know, to be able to sort of shift gears, but there was also a good business reason to be here. They were getting a good bit of traction with GTD. You can imagine GTD as a just generally culturally, sure, the northern European countries are probably going to take to it just because of their system orientation and design orientation, you know, Scandinavia, Germany, UK, Ireland, et cetera. So
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
It's taking off there. But it's still, you know, I'm doing, you know, keynotes in St. Petersburg, Russia, and in Dubai, and in Kuwait, and in Italy, and, you know, in Nashville, Tennessee. So it's all the same thing. We're when you find the same level of professionals out there, I mean, it really is a global world. It's kind of fascinating to see how similar this next generation of professionals really is.
And it's much smaller. It's a much smaller world. Thanks to things like the very things that can overwhelm people are what make it much, much smaller.
Even transcending the differences between, you know, Canadians and Americans. I mean, and the U.S. You know, wow.
Yeah.
Because we don't say, you know, you betcha, you
know. Or a or.
Yeah, right.
I haven't dropped that yet. One of the things that I think some people struggle with, this is kind of the last question we'll ask, is the horizons of focus. I think a lot of people kind of get stuck in the, I'm going to make my list for today. And the review is obviously a key component of making sure that you're moving closer and closer to what you want to do. But what do you say to people who are struggling with they just say, hey, I can't get past the lists, the days lists. I can't get to the next horizons or whatever. They're just stuck in that phase. How do you help people get either break through that? Is it just through consistent practice, or how do you help them manifest to that next or to see beyond just the what's in front of them that specific day?
Yeah, well, it's nice to have some frameworks and some coaching and some motivation about that. Called, hey, when's the last time you lifted up your horizons and took a look? You know, Catherine and I have to shake ourselves every end of year and sit down and say, okay, hey, what would we like to have on our list next year that we accomplished this year? You know, and that won't happen by itself. You actually have to sit down and put a little cognitive, you know, horsepower to focus on those kinds of things. I don't think you need to take those too seriously, but at the same time, they don't necessarily happen by themselves. And all those levels, we actually are in all those levels, I think. So it's like, how much more conscious do you need to be about them? Mm. But there's, I think, you know, a lot of people take them, in a sense, not sincerely enough and too seriously.
Right.
So, you know, I think there's that sort of paradoxical combination where you have to realize how powerful imagery is, and what you put your focus on is where you're going to start leading your life, and you're going to start to put a lot of things in motion, you know, wherever you're putting your creative focus. And you can't help it if you're conscious, putting your creative, whatever you're looking at. So I couldn't get it any simpler than the six horizons of focus. That was as simple as I could get the different, significantly different levels that people have commitments on themselves. Why am I on the planet? What's my vision of success if I fulfill that, you know, wonderfully? What do I need to accomplish in the next short period of time that will get me there? What are the things I need to maintain at some level of standard so I have a healthy body and enterprise? And then what the projects I've got, and then what the actions I have to do about all those. I just couldn't get any simpler than that. All of those are relevant. Now, how conscious do you need about all those? As conscious as you need to basically be present. So, you know, hey, is it time to have a conversation with your boss about your job description? Is it time to have a conversation with your family about where you want to be 5 years from now and your lifestyle and what's going on? Is it time to have a conversation with yourself and any spiritual advisors or life coach advisors about what your purpose on the planet is and where you really want to be lifestyle and career wise? You know, so all of those are great conversations. You don't have to have them all the time, but you need to be aware that maybe that's the level or horizon I need to have a conversation about.
One of the things I love about GTD is that it can really be as powerful as you need it to be, but as simple as you want it to be. It's just as soon as people start to really, it's the notion. And I'm hoping people pick up the new edition because, like you said, it's going to add some more evergreen components to it. The Palm Pilot will probably be removed from the equation, I would imagine.
It is. It's actually almost every specific reference to software has been removed because those will be out of date in a week.
Yeah.
but the behavior about how do I need to assess any tool that I'm using, software, paper, pen, chalkboard, whatever, that really needs to be focused on.
Yeah, the approach is far more important than the app.
Mm-hmm.
So, David, thanks again for taking the time to talk to me today and share some of this with my listeners. The book is called Getting Things Done, The Art of Stress-Free Productivity. Is it called second edition, I guess, at this point?
It says a brand new edition for 2015 on the front cover.
There you go. And beyond. 2015 and beyond, of course.
Yeah, after 2015, they'll take that off. But at least for now, you know, that'll be a sales tool they're using.
So. And it'll be available in all fine bookstores as well as on Amazon. So and it's actually available today. It's available pre-order as we record this, but today's the day it comes out and hits the market. And I couldn't be happier to pick it up and give it another read through because I've read GTD quite a number of times, and every time I've read it, I got something different out of it because it's just that type of book where I found that you're ready for the next thing to really resonate with you as you read it. And every time I read it, I get something different out of it. So David, thanks again for taking the time, and thanks again for creating such a seminal piece of work.
Thanks, Mike, and thanks for all your support. And, you know, best wishes to you and all your listeners here.
A big thank you to David Allen for joining me this week on the podcast. Again, if you are a Patreon supporter, then you would have received the full interview, which clocks in, and it's an additional 10 to 12 minutes of content, which is got some real great nuggets in there as well. So if you are not a supporter, that's cool. You can subscribe to the show and show your support that way via iTunes or Stitcher. Leave a rating or review. That'd be greatly appreciated. It's going to help us grow the podcast and help more people find it. As you've probably been listening, at least I hope you have, over the past few weeks, I've made a few changes to the podcast in terms of how we're going to kind of deliver it. You know, the meetings one would be a great example. We're throwing clips and such, and we're going to see more of that over the course of the next few months. This particular episode was really important to me in terms of getting it out as a straight up conversation because David and I had a great chance to converse. So, again, thanks to David Allen for joining me. You can get his book also at his company site, davidco.com. Just go to the shop, and of course, we'll have that in the show notes, which you'll see, of course, either at the website, productivityist.simplecast.fm, or in iTunes or Stitcher, whatever your podcast aggregator you're using as well. We'll also have the show notes there. Before we go, I want to make mention to some of our new Patreon supporters, because we have two new ones since we have recorded or pre-recorded some of these episodes. So I want to thank Jim Karachi, and I hope I'm pronouncing this right, but Michael Raylander. They are supporting us at the $10 or more level, so they are getting the mention on the show. And I'd be remiss if I didn't mention the three $50 supporters, $50 or more supporters, Michael Eager, Peter Knight, and Anne-Marie Giuliano. Thanks so much. Of course, if you're at that level, you're also getting a 20-minute coaching session with me every month. So if you're not supporting the podcast in terms of, you know, through Patreon at this point, this would be a great time to do so. We've had a lot of people jump on over the month of February into March. You just go to patreon.com/productivityist and you can lend your support there. Anything is great, from as little as a dollar per month all the way up to that $50 level or above. Perks levels obviously will increase depending on what you contribute at. But I'd like to thank all the supporters that are supporting the podcast there and all of you for listening this week. We'll be back next week with another episode of the podcast. I'm really excited about the way the podcast is going and where it's headed. And I hope that you'll share this podcast episode with your friends, your family, anyone who you think will be interested in being more effective, being more efficient, and being better than ever, because that's the goal with this podcast and the goal with Productivityist. Thanks again for joining me this week, and we will see you next week.